Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and auto racing fans. Welcome to the 2012 6th Annual Canadian Motorsports Expo in here on the Mazda stage. My name is Eric Thomas, producer, writer, and anchor of the Raceline Radio Network, heard on 15 stations across Canada, heard here in Toronto on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Monday nights at 7, Canada's first and only national motorsport radio authority. Proud to say 2012 is our 20th anniversary season on the air. Thank you very much for that. Thank you. This afternoon, we welcome to the Mazda stage a young man we first got to know back when he first started winning in karting, way back in 1999, when he was a mere lad of only 13. Progressing through the ranks, he won Canada Cup and Rotax Series Championships, before graduating to cars in 2002, named Rookie of the Year 2 years later in the Formula BMW USA Series. He moved up to the Champ Car Atlantic Series in 2006 along the success of the A1GP World Cup of Motorsport. In 2009, it was on the Firestone Indy Lights Series, and a year later, finished runner-up in points with 8 podiums and 4 poles to win the Greg Moore Legacy Award. And it was time to try a bit, yes indeed. Memory of our good friend, Greg Moore. Then it was time to try the big cars in the IZOD IndyCar Series last year, landing a plum assignment one of the most successful and legendary teams in the sport, Newman Haas Racing, following the footsteps of such luminaries as Nigel Mansell, Mario and Michael Andretti, Alan Jones, Cristiano D'Amato, Sebastian Bourdais, and yes, even fellow Torontonian Paul Tracy. He finished 12th in points, featuring a 4th in Long Beach, tallying 7 top 10 finishes to score Rookie of the Year honors. Things got a little bit tense when owner Carl Haas started to shutter the team down at the end of last year, but good fortune strikes yet again as he lands yet another top assignment, taking over the number 27 Go Daddy Dallaris Chevrolet and Andretti Autosport, a car taken to the spotlight in a very big way by Danny DePatrick. Only 26 years of age, he dazzles us with his eloquence, his intelligence, and his good guy persona that's a delight to fans and media alike. Like so many Canadian drivers, he grew up idolizing. Would you please extend a warm Canadian Motorsports Expo welcome for the Pride of Oakville and the Mayor of Hitchtown, ladies and gentlemen, 2009 Scott the Cloud Agriculture's Rookie of the Year, Mr. James Hinchcliffe. It took me 2 days to write that, and check better be in the mail. All right. Out of the frying pan into another frying pan. How have you managed to nail 2 plum IndyCar assignments in your first 2 seasons in this series, Mr. Hinch?
It doesn't seem right or fair, to be honest. Yes, as a guy who, I made my IndyCar debut in March last year, so I haven't been an IndyCar driver for 12 months yet, and I can already say that I've driven for Newman Haas and Andretti Autosport. So it's beyond a dream come true. You know, it's not often that something like that happens. So I'm very fortunate that I've had some very cool opportunities. And, you know, obviously last year with Newman Haas, they did an incredible job for me, with me, and together we had a really strong season. And when, you know, we perform on track, it's good to see that gets noticed and rewarded. And that's how sort of things came about with Andretti and GoDaddy. So we had a year two, whole lot of unknowns, but very much looking forward to it.
You're going to have a chance to ask questions of James yourself. I just want to bang off a couple here. Did you get any inclination during the season with Carl, Jim, that the team may be shuttered at the end of the year? Because that shocked me. It shocked, I think, everybody out here. And I know it shocked you. Did you get any kind of an undercurrent at all in your head that, you know what, end of this year might be the last one for this?
No, I mean, certainly not. The team this year, or sorry, last year, you know, we operated on a fairly tight budget by IndyCar standards, and certainly when you see the level of performance that we were able to maintain. So it's always a struggle. You know, it's always a struggle in racing to find the sponsorship and get the programs together. At the end of the day, Newman Haas is such a strong team, such an iconic team. They've been there forever, so successful. You know, never in a million years did you think that they wouldn't somehow find a way to make it all happen. So it was definitely a big shock.
When did the process start to find something else, and when did the discussion start with Michael to get you over to Andretti's and replace Dan at the 27?
Well, Michael called me probably end of October, okay. And that's sort of when things started moving, and obviously at that point, you know, Newman Haas was still around, and I was still in a way, you know, tied with them, contractually tied to them. But we always take a phone call, always take a meeting. You know, it's always worth having a conversation, and then I guess it ended up being a good move because obviously, as of December 1st, things moved fairly quickly with Andretti and trying to get everything together. So it's, you know, a program like this, especially with a sponsor like GoDaddy, the way they do it, normally those deals are done months in advance, right? You know, it's not often it comes together so late. So it's still a little bit rushed, but, and, you know, at the end of the day, for the first time in my career, I was able to go to sleep on Christmas Eve and know what I was going to be racing in 2012. So
not a bad Christmas present.
It's not a bad Christmas present at all.
When you were with Haas, Carl Haas, Keenan Haas, an awful lot of experience there from Carl on down, but Carl's not around much with his whole his age, but a lot of guys on that team have been around a long, long time. There's certainly a lot of people to tap, pitch for knowledge and learning, and that was what you did last year. You just talked about that in the panel was on before. So you don't have to win every race, you just have to learn a lot while you're driving to get that experience. Now you go to another team where there's somebody around named Mario Gabriel Andretti who has access. The team is owned by a guy who's won the race in your hometown 7 times, back-to-back 3 times. So you thought the input of success was good at Newman Haas. Talk about how good it's going to be at Andretti Autosport.
Yeah, those Andretti guys, so you've heard of them?
Just a little bit.
Right.
They both have.
Yeah. No, it's very cool because obviously, you know, Michael, he was still racing as recently as, I think, 2007 was his last 500. So it's still very relevant knowledge that he's got. And, you know, Mario's experience is a little more general, but I mean, what he's been through and what he knows. I mean, the guy's forgotten more about racing than I'll ever know. So to have a resource like that is incredible. And then the team itself has been around in different iterations, has had different names over the years, but they've been very successful. They've won championships, they've won 500s. And, you know, I've got 2 teammates that are both race winners, and it's a very strong organization right now. They're very hungry to do, you know, even better than they did last year. And I think the all the ingredients are there for that to happen.
This sounds like a loaded question, but have you been practicing walking in high heel shoes? Let me explain. Don't try to do a lot. Taking over for Danica. I mean, you have Danica fans, you have people who are Danica detractors, but believe it, I mean, it's undeniable the notoriety she gave that series and the media icon she's already become. You've got to walk in her shoes now on that GoDaddy 27. I don't think you walk well in heels. Is that your way of doing it?
Yeah, big heels to fill, right? But
yeah.
I think I got an email from them the other day saying that I should start practicing shaving my legs for an upcoming commercial. So we'll see how that all plays out. I apologize in advance.
Let me just squeeze one more in here. The testing of the Dallara VW12, and it's exciting because the Canadian debut of that car is right over here in the Honda Indy Toronto display. If you haven't seen it yet, go on and look at it. I wasn't enamored with it when I saw photographs of it. I've not seen it on the racetrack. I like it more in person looking at it. Give me your impressions of it. Testing on the oval has not gone that well. Getting better. Road course configuration seems to be okay.
Yeah, I think everybody, it's a very, obviously, right off the bat, it's a very different looking car. I think it just took everybody by a little bit of surprise. We've had the same car for almost 10 years now. And I was the same way, but after spending, you know, 5, 6, 7 days watching it kind of on a racetrack, and now it looks like an Indy car to me. So I think once everybody sees them, especially with all the teams' liveries and everything, you'll get used to the look. It'll be what you perceive an Indy car to be pretty soon. And as far as driving it goes, it's very different from the old car.
How is it different, Rich? Does it feel different? Is it swing different? How's it work?
I mean, even right down to the way you sit in the car, the seating position is different. The car's got more downforce on the road courses, so it corners a lot faster, but mechanically there are some issues, so the low-speed balance isn't quite as good.
Right.
The engines are very different with a 2.2-liter V6 turbocharged engines this year. There's a lot of work being done now with different manufacturers to try and improve that and maximize that package. And then probably the biggest difference is actually the carbon brakes.
All right.
Moving from steel brakes to carbon brakes is an incredible change, and that's something we're all trying to wrap our heads around right now because it's very different.
Can you actually stop, because you always compare Formula One carbon brakes to steel brakes in Indy cars, they can break half the distance of an Indy car. Have you found that to be the case? You maybe can't go that deep into the corner, but you can go a lot deeper now, can't you?
The car stops on a dime and gives change. I mean, it's unbelievable how quickly this thing's stopping. At Sebring with slower engines and balance is not quite there 30, and we're already a second faster, and I guarantee you 8/10 of that's coming to break zone. So it's gonna be interesting.
All right, enough jibber jabber on me. You have your opportunity now to ask your own question here at the Motorsports Expo Fan Forum of our 2011 IZONE Indy Pro Series rookie of the year, James Hinchcliffe. We do have a wireless microphone so everyone can hear the question. If you have a question for James, anything, just put up your hand. I'll be out of view, so let me just sit out here in front of this gentleman right down here.
First day, we saw the introduction of the double file restart, which certainly seems to be controversial in many ways. Some fans love it, others not so much. From a team owner standpoint, there was always a possibility of multi-car pilot. As a driver, what were your thoughts on the double file restart last year?
I think all the drivers had a similar sort of position at first, and we were all very wary of it. But again, it was just because it was different. You know, we go to St. Pete and did a phenomenal job of looking like complete morons, crashing into each other at every opportunity we had. Sidebar, I wasn't actually in that race, so I'm just going to throw that out there. But then, you know, as the season went on, we got used to it. You know, and I think it's like anything. You throw the fit, and you think, no, change is bad, we can't do this. And then once you're forced to do it, you're forced to do it. You just sort of get on with it. And I think it was fairly well received by the fans. Yeah, the team owners hold their breath every time we have to do it. But, you know, that's part of the sport. And the only place where it really sort of causes an issue is Indianapolis. And I think last year they did a pretty good job of the scooping of the track and all that. But it's still a risky place to do it. This year will be better with the new car, with the way the side pods are, the chance of interlocking wheels are a lot less, and I think that's a big part of it. So, yeah, moving forward, I think we're going to keep doing it, and we're just going to get more and more comfortable with it to the point where people are going to forget that we ever did single file restarts.
Thanks for the question, sir. Well, anybody else, please put up your hand. I'll wait for you.
You know, Montana is not a track that I've been to in any way, so it's tough for me to say how I feel about that. You know, obviously that track's got a little bit of dark history for us, but it's, you know, it just is another racetrack. And the big thing that we have to do is make sure that we get this new car sorted on the ovals, and then it won't really matter what track we're at. So I know the track's has had a lot of changes since 99. It's safer than it was. The cars are a lot safer than they were. So, yeah, it's just it's more a function, I think, of getting that car sorted out so we can have a good, fun race, safe race.
Gentlemen over here.
Hi, my name is Luke. I'm a big fan. I just wanted to know, going into this season, in the IndyCar, do you feel like you're on a level playing field with some of the guys who have more years in IndyCar? And also, to prepare for the season, do you spend a lot of time on a racing simulator?
Two good questions, yeah. First off, I think that, yeah, in a lot of ways, the new car does sort of level the playing field a bit, but ultimately, the guys who have a lot of experience, you know, the Darios of this world, they were around and they were getting new cars every year. So they actually have a lot of experience in getting up to speed in a new car. So in one sense, it sort of levels the playing field, but at the end of the day, experience really reigns supreme. But I think it's going to open some opportunities for some guys that were maybe in some teams that were midfield to move up a little bit. So that'll be fun. In terms of practicing on simulators, the big problem right now is no simulator has an EW12 in it. So you know, you can do it for the sake of, you know, getting reaction times and you know, sort of keeping the mind sharp more than anything. But unfortunately, our car's not yet in the sim to be using. So once Delora gets our new facility up and running in Indianapolis, there we'll have more access to something like that. And then, yeah, for sure, I'll be in every chance I get.
Questions on the floor? Lots of time here. Put up your hand if you have a question in the back. We can wait for the microphones to be halfway. Watch this. Give us your first name and where you're from.
Mike Daly from Toronto.
All right.
James, talk about downforce from the old car to the new car. I noticed the forepan of the EW12 is a lot wider. Does the team feel the difference in downforce? Is there more downforce or less downforce?
Yeah, no, there certainly is more downforce in this car. And that was one of the design goals. And what was important was to try and generate, as you pointed out, a good observation, we're trying to generate as much from the floor as possible. So that way, when you're running behind other cars in traffic, you're not quite as affected is if you're relying solely on the wings for the downpour. So, you know, at Sebring, we were there, it was hot and greasy and gross and dirty, and through some of those quicker corners, you can really feel how much better this thing's going to be in fast track. So, places like Mid-Ohio and Sonoma, I think you're going to see significant improvements in lap time, and a lot of that's going to be all in the high-speed corners because of the downpour. So, we're looking forward to getting on a proper quick road track and giving it a whirl.
Anybody else on the floor? Lady right here. She's a VIP, be careful. First name and where are you from?
Harley, and I'm Descendants Mother.
Yes, I know that. I'm glad you announced it.
Yeah, hey, VIP.
Okay.
For real.
Okay,
for
the last Q&A that was here a few minutes ago, there was a talk about getting in and out of the car in a situation where the car's going to fire you and ask you. Getting up, if you have limited time to get in the car. It was suggested by some of the panel that this should be part of the testing days, you know, the last test day, you know, the few days you're there, that you can practice a red light or something where you have to get out of that car and time it, where the marshals would come and help you, should be there also practicing this. Do you feel that this would be beneficial to use on a regular basis?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, there was a five-second test. And to get your license, you had to be able to undo your seatbelt, remove your steering wheel, and get yourself out of the car under 5 seconds. Why that stopped, I don't know. I've never had to do it in my career. At any level of the sport have I ever had to do that test. And I don't see why we shouldn't have to do it. One of the big differences in IndyCar is when we run on the ovals, the head pads that you run on the headrest really restrict our ability to get out of the car. So especially on oval tracks, it's certainly something that we should practice and have some sort of system in place because it is not easy without now the connections we have with the radio, your water tube, the black box to your earpieces. There's three different connections. That's once you've got the headrest out, or if you just try and force yourself out of the headrest because sometimes you can't do it in the ovals with the head pads in the car. So they really need to look at a system. With the new car, the drivers complained last year that everybody had a different way of connecting the headrest to the car, and so when the marshals got there in an emergency situation, they didn't necessarily know what kind of setup you had, and they weren't able to react as quickly. And the new car is a standard system in terms of getting the pins out to get the headrest off, but unfortunately, the way they designed it, the drivers can't actually reach it.
Yeah, is this something that the driver should bring to the attention of the series?
It's been brought to the attention of the series. Yeah. It's now the issue of Dallara and the series to make sure something's done about it. We have a nice big meeting in Indianapolis tomorrow morning at 8:30 with all the drivers in our little association, and this is one of the topics that's come up. And there will be changes because I don't think you can actually risk the car in its current configuration safely.
Okay. One of the other things that came up also was do you find that there was still a lot of improvement that could be put into the seats and the helmets, just the whole, you know, the safety of the driver in general? I know they've come a long way over the last, you know, decade or more, but do you feel that there's still more room, and what do you think, like?
I think the important thing is to never get complacent, and IndyCar never has. They've always been on the forefront of safety, and you know, you mentioned seats. I don't think there's any way they could do more work on seats than they've done. They've done so much work on the materials that we use, how they deform in an accident. The new car actually has mandatory bits of foam underneath and behind the driver that were developed for rearward impacts and impacts like what Justin Wilson had, or sort of a vertical impact to prevent spine injuries. So, I mean, IndyCar has been contacted by NASA in the past for some of their research on foam absorption and things for astronauts in crash landing situations, because IndyCar was significantly ahead of the curve compared to NASA. So they're clearly doing something right, and they never have been complacent about it. So you always keep pushing, you always, you know, keep trying to improve, but you know, ultimately they're doing a very good job.
One more question.
You're on. You need to ask me if you want to drive it home.
You're trying to tell us you're going to stop working when we know it's impossible, so ask me.
Actually, I know. I can't learn that much, to be honest.
I know you know.
I know from you, but you might want to share with some of the audience how you approach keeping your heart rate at a steady level to get you through the races. Because they were talking about how some drivers, like they hold their breath, to me physically at the end of the race. I'm so exhausted. So, and I know you've got a lot into this in these areas, so I'm going to share that with the others.
Yeah, honestly, the driving a formula car is very physical. A lot of people don't appreciate the physical element of it, but we train 6 days a week, 2 to 3 hours a day, to be fit to drive a mini car for a race distance. And a big part of that is, you know, when you're going those kind of speeds and working that hard, your heart rate is quite high. And the higher your heart rate is for the longer period of time, the more exhausted you get. So it's very important to try and keep your heart rate as low as possible. You do that through very specific breathing techniques, remembering to relax. Because when you're rolling a race car around a track at 200 and something miles an hour, it's very easy to get a little tense and hold your breath, for example. Some of the ovals, you have to hold your breath in the corners because the G-forces, they push the air out of your lungs if you're not holding your breath. So places like Texas and Iowa, some of those high-bay tracks, you have to have a very specific breathing pattern throughout a lap, or else you're going to run into some trouble. So it's a very big part of it, and a lot of studies about it. We've worn heart rate monitors in the car before, and there's a direct correlation between how high your heart rate goes from your base heart rate and sort of the level of performance. And the higher it goes, the less consistent you become, and the more mistakes you make.
No questions from the floor? Another one down front. Anyone wants to get another question? Just raise your hand on the wireless mic. Go ahead, sir. First thing, where are you from? Sorry, I'll give you the
window. James Cole from Toronto.
Nice to have you.
James, taking safety into account again, touching on that subject again, looking at the FIA, for example, and Formula One Technical Working Group, they're constantly monitoring, looking into closed cockpit for the current design moving forward. They haven't come to any firm conclusion, but certainly something that they're looking into. Has this propped up any conversations with the car, the drivers of the series, an area to investigate?
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, obviously after Las Vegas, that was a hot topic conversation. And, you know, the problem is that's such a big fundamental shift in the design of our cars that I'm not saying it's not the way to go, but that's not something you do overnight. And the guys that sit there saying, oh, well, it's outrageous you don't have those, I mean, they don't get it. It's a very ignorant thing to say. So I know that there are now people doing these investigations, doing these studies, but it's a big if, because having a closed cockpit brings up a whole other list of challenges and safety concerns. But if that's the way forward, it's not going to be for 5 years probably. So again, it's going back to what we were saying before, it's staying on top of safety, never being complacent, investigating these new ideas and opportunities, even if at the end of the day they end up not being the right way to go, you've got to put in the time to see if that might be the right avenue. So it's definitely come up a lot, and I think you're going to hear a lot about it over the next couple of years until sort of a decisive position can be taken.
Anybody from the floor? Got one that nobody did. Well, down here, gentlemen with the two. Just meeting one or another.
God, it's nice to hear somebody say two again.
Two.
Say that around.
At least we can say the word.
What's that?
Some people don't know how to say it.
Because
you got saw. Two. What?
You spelled that wrong, man. You just stare at it like, I don't know.
I know. What's that?
You spelled twerk wrong.
No, you turn wrong. Go ahead with the twerk.
Anyways, congratulations. Great guy this year. Best of luck. With the new car this year, do you find that there's a big turbo lag in driving it as opposed to the older turbo cars, I guess the older E generation cars, and how do you have to change the driving style of it?
Yeah, it's been a big change for us, for sure. And if you go back to sort of the last open wheel car that had a turbocharger, you know, it was the Champ cars, and the big difference that we have right now is the Champ car turbo engines were V8s. And a V8 engine has a lot of torque on its own. If you take a turbo off a V8, it's still going to be a torquey motor. And thus we had a naturally aspirated V8 last year, so we were used to a lot of torque. With the new engine, it's a 2.2 liter 6-cylinder engine, which doesn't have a lot of torque. So when it's off the turbo, it's quite slow. So there is a little bit of turbo lag right now that we're trying to play with, but it's different than in years past, because in years past you could use the torque of the V8 to get you up to where the turbo kicks in, and then the thing takes off. So for right now, there's a lot of playing around with the engine manufacturer, but working with the different parameters in the engines to try and reduce the lag. There are different, all sorts of complicated systems and tricks to try and take care of it. that's also a natural progression right now for New England. We have big fish to fry. We have, you know, sort of medium fish to fry, then little things. And turbo lag is somewhere in the little to medium range. You got to make sure things like pistons don't go through the line. So once they get some of those bigger issues sorted, then we'll start sort of chipping away and taking care of that. But for sure, it changes the way you approach exiting the corner, how you get to power, when you get to power. We do have some adjustment as to how the boost ramps up. So if it's too aggressive on the street circuit, for example, I can hook him out on the steering wheel and it'll ramp up more progressively. So there's some really cool things with working with a turbo engine that we're going to play with over the year.
Questions on the floor for James Hinchcliffe? Just put up your hand. We have a wireless mic. Have they decided on your team in terms of your crew chief and your engineer just to name drop? Because you'd be surprised when you fans know who these people are.
Yes, for the most part they have. I'm going to be engineered by a gentleman called Tino Valli, who's been with Andretti for a long time. And my chief mechanic, a guy called Dave Sharpley, again, is a guy that's been around for quite a long time. And a lot of this crew was Danica's crew last year. It was in a few substitutions, but it's a good group of guys. They're very hungry. You know, I think it's any secret that it wasn't necessarily the happiest environment in the last few races of the last year. And they're all very looking forward to a new season, new challenge, new car, new driver. So there's it's a lot of it's like a first date. Everyone's really excited. You know, it's like puppy love right now. So everybody's looking forward to it.
Have you noticed already a different way about going about things and executing with Andretti Autosport compared to Newman Haas? Not that one is better than the other, it's different. Maybe just enlighten us with a few different ways to go about things. Maybe some of them you like, maybe some you don't like.
I think every team is different from Newman Haas. I think they operate in a very unique way. And, you know, when I got there, obviously it was my first experience in IndyCar, so I thought, oh, okay, this is how an IndyCar team operates. That's not necessarily true. They were so, you know, formulaic. They were so precise, so scientific. They were very well structured, well oiled machine. Not that Andretti isn't, but Andretti operates more like race teams that I've worked at traditionally in the past. And it's been interesting because obviously they've not had a lot of success with that sort of structure. And so there's actually been a couple elements of the Newman Haas way of doing things that I've tried to inject into the Andretti way of doing things. And there's been a couple of the Andretti way of doing things that I've kind of beat into myself and get rid of the Newman Haas way of doing things. So
be a good lawyer.
We're trying to find the best of both worlds right now. And it's good. I think it's going to all work out well.
We have a back. First name, where are you from, sir?
And Rob. I'm from Woodridge. And race mechanics. James, for somebody that came up from car racing, what do you think is the most important thing young drivers need to know if they want to end up in the brand?
The most important, I wish there was one important thing that young drivers have to know if they want to make it to IndyCar. There's a few important elements, you know, and the unique part about IndyCar racing and racing in motorsports in general is we're really a two-tiered sport. We're business and we're a sport. And a lot of other sports, if you're a really good hockey player, you're going to play hockey. Really. If you're a really good race car driver, that's not necessarily where you're going to end up. Racing, not playing hockey. There's this whole other unique side of our sport, it's the business side of it, and I think it's much more known now how the sport operates these days. The importance on sponsorship, the importance on relevance outside of the car, as well as being good in the car. And so the biggest thing for young drivers now is just to appreciate that it's a lot of hard work, because it's so much more than just being a good racing driver. There's a lot of good racing drivers. You know, there's, 600, 700 players in the NHL? 33 guys get a start at the Indy 500. So your window is so much smaller. There's a lot of good drivers that can fill those seats, but you need to be a good driver and a good representative of whatever company is sponsoring the car to be there, because that's what we're there for. So it's, you know, not to get disillusioned by it, but certainly you need to appreciate that there's a lot more to our sport than just driving a race car, and you need to be able to be prepared to put in the hard work, because there's a lot of hard work to do.
More front wing, Stephanie Walbrecht, the media is here too. Go ahead, Steph.
Thanks, Derek. Actually, what is happening here is I'm here reporting for more front wing, and I'm live tweeting the session. Yes, using social media.
I thought you were calling for recipes.
And I have a question for you from Twitter. The gentleman's name is Indy Race, and he wants to know what you find the most interesting element of race weekends, practice, qualifying, or the race from a driver's view.
I mean, I I guess it probably sounds a little predictable, but the race, you know, it's, the race is when it matters. The race is when it counts. That's when points get paid and prize money gets paid, and that's when people are really watching. So it's, you don't, you know, you don't get as much enjoyment out of a pole position as you do out of a race win. So certainly the most exciting and most terrifying and stressful part of a race weekend is definitely the race itself.
Social media is here. Go ahead.
First name, where you're from, sir?
I like your hat.
It's a Don Scarborough. Just wondering, with your foray into the Rolex this year, and great job, by the way. I wonder how much, first of all, you enjoyed it, and also plan on perhaps Le Mans later in your career. And,
yeah, well, I got a tremendous opportunity from Asta to go run the Rolex 24 and the RX-8, the ski course. And I've always wanted to get into sports car racing a little bit. I've always wanted to do those long races. And so this was my first opportunity to go to Daytona, and I cannot tell you how much fun I had. It was an absolute blast. The car was such a treat to drive. The team was absolutely top-notch. The event itself was just incredible. And it was the 15th anniversary of the race, so it brought out a couple extra heavy hitters, and you looked at the entry list, and it was unbelievable. The driver's meeting, I mean, I sat there and, yeah, it was just such a cool experience. And, you know, the race, it's outrageous to think that these cars actually sit there and run flat out for 24 hours, but it really is a 24-hour sprint race these days because the cars are so reliable, the drivers are all so good. And it was such an awesome opportunity. And so, yeah, moving forward, I'd love to have a chance to do them all. It's going to be difficult while still in IndyCar because June is a busy month for us as it is for them, so that might be later. That's the good thing about Daytona and Sebring. But no, all those events are things I want to shake off in my career. I've got a pretty long bucket list when it comes to my racing career, so we got a few check off. We've got a few more to go.
Questions for James Hinchcliffe? Just raise your hand, you have a wireless mic.
Let me talk about your fellow. Is there anyone
down here? Go ahead. What else is on your bucket list, James, you said?
Well, in terms of competing in certain events, you know, I'd like to do Sebring. I'd really like to do them all. I would, at some point in my career, like to try stock car. I'd really like to give that a whirl and see what it's all about.
Dirt or pavement?
Pavement.
Oh, come on.
I'll do it on dirt as well. I'll grab anything.
Well, get you a dirt modified down Niagara Way. Would that work?
Any day. I'll grab anything with four wheels. Two wheels, no way. Those guys are nuts.
Even mom's shaking her head.
Yeah, there's no way. 50cc fifth scooter, that's as fast as I go on two wheels. But so there's a couple of things like that. And then obviously, you know, in terms of what I'm currently doing, there are goals set in terms of, you know, I'd like to win the 500, for example. I'd like to win the race in Toronto. I'd like to win a championship. So there's still a couple of things on there that I need to get done. The 24 hours of lemons, I think, would be fun one year too, for those of you that know what that is.
So let me address a couple of issues here, and then probably enough for me. Yesterday when we had the media panel here, I was kind of taken aback by an anti-IndyCar kind of an undercurrent about, first it started with the leader card payment thing, and we're going to talk about that, and they thought that it was unfair to subsidize teams. And one of them said, I'm going to mention names, that the IndyCar doesn't really know how to market its drivers, and was kind of surprised by kind of an anti-undercurrent. I really sort of took offense to that, I didn't say anything, but I think that they're really trying their best to bring this series back. The current of the race in Toronto, some people say, well, I really think it's starting to come back, and I want as a driver, and a Toronto driver, to get some impressions from you on what you think. Are they doing enough to market their drivers in the IndyCar as a series in this race in Toronto? Is the vibe coming back in your estimation, your hometown?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think if you think in the last couple of years of the Toronto race, before we had our 1 year off in 08, you know, things were not great. We had some, you know, sketchy sponsor issues with the race. But then when it came back, you know, we run by Andretti and now with Savory Green. These guys know how to run a race, and I think it's growing every year. The crowds are going up every year. The atmosphere feels better every year. So, you know, from what I've seen from my position, I think it really is growing and it's starting to get back to where it was. And you know, there's still a long way to go, but we just need progress. If every year we get a little bit better, that's exactly what we're aiming for. In terms of the other point about IndyCar marketing its drivers, I think there's always room for improvement. You know, I think they're doing a better job now than they were 5 years ago. I hope that 5 years from now they're doing a better job than they are right now. But that's all a process. You know, they set up that office out in California, the IndyCar West, to sort of get us more in touch with mainstream media and what have you. And projects are starting to come out of that now, and I think we're going to see some cool things. There's a couple things I know about I'm not allowed to talk about, but there's some cool things that are coming out in the next sort of 12 to 18 months, and then in that 12 to 18 months, I'm sure we'll start working on some other projects that are going to be coming out, you know, again, a year after that. So it's important to keep pushing that element, because I think that's a big part of what's made, you know, some other motorsport series very successful.
Back to Stephanie, I think she made another tweet.
Yes, we have another tweet. Actually, two. Do you guys like 2 minutes?
Here we go.
Okay, first one's from Wingside Up. Wants to know who you think would be the toughest rookie to beat this season.
That's a good question. I think there might still be some rookies that are unannounced, so there might be a couple people to add to that category. So I don't know if I should actually give an accurate answer, but you know, certainly Joseph Newgarden coming off the Lights Championship last year is going to be he's going to be a good little driver, so he's got some opportunity. But you know, he raced against his teammate last year, Esteban Guerrieri, all season long for that championship. And Esteban hasn't announced a deal yet, but if he gets one done, he's going to be very good as well. So there's a couple of good guys moving up.
Another one.
Not going to mention Simon.
You know what? Yeah, sure, passionate. Let me take that all back and just say Simon. That's not fair. He shouldn't be a rookie.
No, he probably
is. Is there another one?
Yes, there is. From William Mazzeo, wants to know if you would like to return to the days the cars did 240 in Fontana.
I'd like to return to the days when the cars do 240 at the speedway, maybe not Fontana. I've got nothing wrong with going 240 miles an hour, but I think you got to be specific about which track you do it on.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
One more for me, we've got to wrap up here in about 3 minutes or so. Last year, the deal came together late, so you missed St. Pete if memory serves correct. That won't happen this year. There's some thoughts going into that. First year at St. Pete, and the fact that you're going to ramp up and do that first one, and that's the springboard and the launch board that gets you prepped for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, you know, as if the new car, new engine, new team wasn't enough, I got to go to track. I'm not driven a new car out yet. So, you know, might as well get it all in one go. Go big or go home. But no, that's such a cool event. It's a great place to start the season for us. It's, you know, it's got the same sort of vibe as Toronto, full street race, you know, real sort of party theme. And it's a fun track, usually some pretty good racing, some good passing opportunities for a street course. So it's the most exciting start to the season I've ever had for a lot of reasons, but mainly because there's so many unknowns. Like I've been saying, you don't know which team figures this car out the best. You don't know which engine is going to be the quickest or the most reliable yet. So it's like it's this terrifying thought of showing up to St. Pete having no idea where you stack up. But that's, you know, that's racing. So just hopefully we've done our hard work and we put in more hours than the other guys and we come out on top.
Well, I can probably speak for everybody here within earshot of the speakers here that we were just thrilled to pieces that you went from one good assignment to an even better assignment. I can't think of a better ambassador from this city, from this market, for this country in the eyes of any car series. You've got Tagliani in there. Hopefully PT will get some action this year. How about a round of applause for this young man? What a talent.